reached it in half an hour, and I became aware that it was two towers joined together, 6 stories high, judging from the window spaces, the farther tower actually projecting out over the void beneath. It was a steep climb to the main door, and before we reached it, the womenfolk of the tower were hurrying down to us, full of chatter and alarm, clamouring their questions at Ulubba, but sparing a glance for the handsome stranger with the interesting whiskers. I'm not unused to female attention, as you know, but I don't recall more brazen preening and ogling than I got from Ulubba Walk's domestics. Plainly, they were no strangers to the hayloft and the long grass. One reason for their shameless glad-eyeing soon became apparent. Ulubba Walk's stronghold proved to be almost entirely devoid of men, the few there were being either grey-bearded dotards or small boys. Presumably the young ones were away at the civil wars, as conscripts or mercenaries, but I never found out on account of not speaking the lingo. It's a damn bore, as you know, for you stand like a tailor's dummy while the world prattles about you, and worse for me, I think, because I'm used to slinging the bat wherever I am. They're mighty strange places, these Abyssinian castles, not unlike our border peels, with rooms piled on each other like so many boxes connected by stairs that are no better than ladders. Since from what Ulubba had said we might have to withstand a siege, I was relieved to find that the main door was a massive affair, which it would have taken artillery to breach, and the adobe walls were feet thick, with narrow windows well above ground level, offering a good field of fire. With my Jocelyn and 50 rounds, I could give a warm reception to anyone toiling up the path to our eyrie. If I had any doubts about Ulubba Walk's importance, they would have been dispelled by the respect amounting to reverence with which she was treated. They fairly grovelled to her, not only the slaves who made up half the citadel's residence, but the free women and the 2 elderly men who seemed to act as stewards or chamberlains. She delivered a brisk speech to the assembled staff in the great ground-floor hall, which seemed to be used as a common room, but what she said was Amharic to me, except at the point where she indicated me, and the whole gang turned in my direction and bowed. When she dismissed them, I was conducted to an airy chamber on the 3rd floor, bone-clean and well, if sparsely furnished, with a good charpoy, leather chair, table, washstand, rug on the floor, and leather curtain on the arrow-slit window. I've stayed in country inns at home that were less decent and comfortable. To my disappointment, I was attended by the village idiot, supervised by a stout dragon with a moustache who must have been the only plain Jane in the place, for the dolly mops who'd been on hand at our arrival had been typical ab, which is to say they'd range from comely to ravishing. I wondered if Ulubba had decided I'd be safer with a fat crone. If so, it wasn't a bad omen. Not having had a wink of sleep since our bivouac at Ad Abaga the night before last, I slept the day through, and it was evening when I was summoned to a spacious apartment on the 2nd floor and had my first taste of formal Ab dining. What is the norm, I can't say, because on latter occasions I've lounged on cushions on the floor and sat up at a table like a Christian, but Shay Ulubba we reclined on charpoys, Roman orgy fashion, with a low table apiece. But what lent the meal a delightful charm was that the girls waiting on us wore nothing but little aprons of leather laces. I think they had brass collars and a bracelet or two as well, but I can't say I took much note. You don't, when your mezze is being poured by a lovely little Hebe who rests her bare punt on your shoulder as she stoops to your cup. Ooh, how I resisted the temptation to turn my head and go munch, I cannot imagine. If you suppose, by the way, that I am unduly susceptible, you should read the recollections of J. A. St. John, Esquire, who travelled in Abyssinia in the 1840s, and appears to have spent most of his time goggling at boobies, on which he was obviously an authority. He has drooling descriptions of slave girls, and a most scholarly passage in which he compares Ethiopian jugs to Egyptian ones, and finds the former more finely shaped and better placed. The negro bosom he discounts as having a tendency to droop, which suggests to me that he never got the length of Zululand or Dahomey, where the ladies give glorious meaning to the term double-breasted. That, by the way, I admire the female form myself, but J.A. St. John needed a course of cold baths, if you ask me. To resume. The meal consists